This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. University athletics are big business, and that can sometimes mean big controversy. Mary Willingham is an academic advisor at UNC Chapel Hill. She claims that many UNC athletes are unable to read above a grade school level. This comes more than a year after Willingham blew the whistle on a no-show classes controversy that disproportionately enrolled student-athletes. Now, at first, UNC denied it all, but then Chancellor Carol Folt later apologized for the lack of oversight on the no-show classes, and she's also promoted academic policy reforms. So what are the bigger issues here? There's a lot at stake, not just for UNC. Today we're talking to WUNC reporter Jeff Tiberi. He's been following the story. Jeff, welcome. Good to talk with you.
Hey, Frank. How are you?
Bring us up to speed now on the controversy with Mary Willingham and UNC.
So the most recent chapter involving Mary Willingham is that she decided to do some research, or she describes it, a descriptive analysis. She worked with a clinical psychologist, and she had 183 student-athletes, the majority of whom where men's basketball and football players take a standardized test. She then made a correlation between how the students performed on that test and grade reading level. Her findings are that 60% of the folks who took that test are reading between a fourth and an eighth grade level, and 10% are reading at a third grade level or below. There are questions about the practices and the findings. The university has come out and strongly disagreed with this, but at the same time, they have not really addressed the specifics of what they claim to be more accurate numbers and some of the real nuanced things.
Yeah, so the qualitative question, are these students kind of ready for college, really has not been quite answered. But the university has been very clear and very specific about the quantitative research, whether or not you can correlate the testing she did with actual grade level competence.
Yes. One footnote that I would add here, maybe the question hasn't been answered in this instance, but the NCAA has essentially what are called minimum qualifications to get into school to receive a Division I scholarship. And those are, generally speaking, you can score less than 1,000 on the SAT. You can finish college, or you can finish high school with slightly above a 2.0 GPA. Now, those are obviously not numbers that are going to get you into the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. So one of the questions among many that Mary Willingham is asking and raising is, how can we, you know, honestly, transparently look at this thing and say, how is Joe Smith or Steve Wilson, whatever, make up a name, going to compete in the average political science or biology or history class at UNC Chapel Hill when a lot of these folks are far below the standards that the average student at Chapel Hill has met in order to enter and take these classes.
And but the university is saying the standards set by the NCAA are being met. They have challenged the quantitative, the numbers, and the correlation that Mary Willingham has made.
They have, and this is another layer of this conversation, not to jump all around, but part of this is, what about the front door? What about these minimum requirements to get in? Bubba Cunningham, the athletic director at UNC Chapel Hill, said last week that, you know, this should be looked at. This is something that maybe needs to come up. And, you know, there was pretty quickly some pushback or some, well, hang on a second, from some of the coaches. They said, now, if you raise the standards, how are we going to compete? And now there's this push and pull between academics and integrity and having successful teams and, of course, money and how much money you're going to be able to generate.
What is Mary Willingham's job at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and why is she so invested in this issue?
So she worked with, she estimates about 500 students between 2003 and 2010. She was largely an academic advisor for them. She helped them write papers. She admits that she helped student athletes, and I use that phrase hesitantly, but she helped athletes plagiarize at times to get through classes. She stopped working with athletes after about 2 years ago, and now she's a tutor for the general population, general student population.
All right, and here she is, Mary Willingham, talking about the need for a change and about the commitment that that change would require.
Would we have to do remedial work with them? Yes. Would we have to push back on the K-12 system to do their job? Yes. Would we have to push back on families and communities to help us? Yes. But the time has come. It's been way too long. And so much money is being made off of these young men, and they're really not getting anything.
So there she's talking about the fact that it is a much bigger picture and it does involve K-12 education, but this university has a responsibility, according to Mary Willingham.
So, yes, and the pushback, another element here in play is pay for play and whether or not students who are athletes should be compensated if they are part of these revenue sports, men's basketball and football. And for a long time, the pushback has been, well, hey, wait a second, they get a free education. That's worth something. And, you know, one of the many questions she's raising is, well, what kind of education is this? And if you look at a lot of the big-time athletic departments, athletes often fall into a small number of majors. At Carolina, it's three or four majors where a lot of the men's basketball and football players are. Well, UNC Chapel Hill has almost 80 undergraduate majors. So, you know, what's the quality of education? Is it really about educating and getting them to absorb the best they can and having them lead successful and fulfilling lives afterward? Or is it really about getting them in and, you know, continuing to keep them eligible in order to have the sports teams have their full roster of athletes?
Right. And a lot of this controversy centers on the correlations made between test results that were done in Mary Willingham's study and whether or not they can at all correlate to literacy levels and reading levels. So talk about the study that UNC released regarding athlete literacy.
So UNC looked at admissions of its athletes over an eight-year period. And what they're saying is, based on the threshold that Willingham has indicated and other media outlets have indicated, almost 100% of the athletes are up to par. And almost 100% of the athletes, according to others, are the standard others have used, are ready to go, so to speak.
So we've got this classic apples-oranges kinds of controversy, mm-hmm. which is why it has been in the press for so long and why it's so difficult to even talk about. You have, on the one hand, the rules, which UNC will point to its report and say, we're following the rules. This is what they say, and by those standards, we're doing everything. And then the larger issues that this raises that you just talked about, is this really all that we can expect of a university that's bringing these students through and benefiting so much by them, which by rule we don't have to address, right? But it's a big question. All of these things going on top of the fact that UNC is absolutely not alone, and this is something that Chancellor Carol Folt talks about in her when she addresses this issue.
The scrutiny that is taking place here is, of course, part of a much larger national conversation about the role and the impact of college sports, and even further, about the commitment schools are making to ensure that students are receiving the support they need to succeed in the classroom, to advance to graduation, as well as on the playing field.
So it's a big national issue. The UNC, absolutely not alone. And there is no school with a Division I team that isn't facing the same things. The UNC is now in the headlines, but here we are, and this is UNC. So what does Carol Folt say she's done already? Because she has talked about reforms that the university is already in the process of making.
Yes. So there are reforms about more detailed instructions for independent studies and spot checks of attendance and who is in classrooms and instructors having to do a better job of showing what the syllabi are and what the course materials are. There are also indications. I spoke with someone named Andy Perrin today, who's a faculty athletic committee member. He's also on the Provost Dean's Student Athlete Academic Initiative Working Group. One of the things he talked to me about were these minimum qualifiers that we mentioned. And what these groups are doing is they've created an equation, and they're trying to take a prospective athlete and make an estimation of where he is going to land on the GPA in his first year at Carolina. And what Perrin said is that if an athlete is projected to do below a 2.0, they're no longer going to get consideration, where in the past they have. And what he indicated in the numbers, he didn't have the firm numbers, but he said, roughly speaking, about a third of these very low qualifiers have been admitted compared to the number of very low qualifiers since before this scandal broke a couple of years ago.
So this also raises the question, and it's a much larger question, about the status of the so-called amateur athlete or the student athlete, which the university is able to profit by. The athletes aren't, and they're doing something about that, right? I mean, what kinds of things are they prevented from doing? And the fact is that they're now taking action to change their status.
So as an amateur, you can't be paid. You are not considered an employee, and you can't have representation. You can't hire an agent. If you were to receive payment or hire an agent, then you are no longer an amateur. You have forfeited that status. You're going to lose your eligibility. There are two big things that are taking place right now. One is a class action federal lawsuit by a former UCLA basketball player named Ed O'Bannon. And as the story goes, he went to pick up his son a few years ago. He graduated or he left school in 95 or 96. And he went to pick up his son a few years ago and saw that his son was playing a video game with a guy who was wearing a UCLA jersey and looked an awful lot like Ed O'Bannon. And Ed O'Bannon said, hey, now, wait a second. That's me. That's my likeness. Where's my cut of this pie, so to speak? So he has filed this lawsuit. Mary Willingham is now a witness in that lawsuit, challenging the NCAA about using amateurs in this commercial setting. And should they receive a piece of the pie, whether it's video games or championship DVDs or jersey sales, what are they entitled to? Another thing that just happened this week, Kane Coulter is the quarterback at Northwestern University, and he's leading a group of Northwestern athletes that are seeking to be the first group of college athletes to be a union, to have a labor union. They now have the support of the NFL Players Association, which is a pretty significant step. And essentially what they're saying is, if you look at grad programs, plenty of grad programs around the country, there might be grad students that are making $8,000 per semester for 20 hours a week through research grants, through whatever. What makes us different? And if you – this is the athletes talking. They say, we're part of this multi-billion dollar a year industry. We'd like to be represented. We'd like to be compensated.
All right. Well, we will stay tuned. Jeff DeBerry, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Frank.
Jeff DeBerry, WUNC's Greensboro Bureau Chief. Just ahead, a news roundtable. We're going to talk about the State of the Union address, what it means for all of us and all of us here in North Carolina. You're listening to the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.